think that's a good title for the podcast, actually. Expect the unexpected. I like
that. Oh, ice cream and coffee could be the other one.
Herzlich willkommen zu einer neuen Folge von Beste Zeit, dem Podcast zum Auslandsstudium von und mit College Content. Ich bin Alexandra.
Und ich bin Elias.
Und gemeinsam sind wir die Gastgeber dieses Podcasts, mit dem wir euer Fernweh wecken und euch dabei unterstützen wollen, eure ganz eigene beste Zeit im Ausland zu erleben.
In der heutigen Folge geht es für uns wieder etwas weiter weg. Trommelwirbel. Und zwar nach Australien. Juhu. Wir haben nämlich mit Belinda Price von der University of Melbourne gesprochen. Belinda arbeitet nicht nur seit mehr als 10 Jahren für die Universität, sondern ist auch in Melbourne geboren und aufgewachsen.
Sie kennt die Stadt also wie keine zweite und hat uns viele tolle Einblicke in eine der wohl hippesten Metropolen der Welt gegeben. Und was zudem bei einer Folge mit der University of Melbourne auf gar keinen Fall fehlen durfte, ist das Thema akademische Qualität.
Genau, denn passend zu unserer Folge wurde vor wenigen Wochen das bekannte QS-Ranking veröffentlicht, bei dem die University of Melbourne als beste Hochschule in Australien und eine der besten Hochschulen weltweit auf Platz 14 gerankt wurde.
Darüber und mehr erzählt uns Belinda in dieser Folge. Deswegen springen wir direkt rein. Viel Spaß beim Hören und los geht's. Hey, Belinda, great to have you on our podcast today.
Thank you so much.
Hey. Hi. So we have a bunch of eager listeners who are excited to hear about studying abroad in Melbourne. So I'd say let's dive right in and learn a little bit about you first. What is your role at the University of Melbourne?
I love speaking about myself. So let's go. What's my role at Melbourne? I've been at the University of Melbourne for about 10 years, and I've been working in the global learning team for all of that time. My role is managing the inbound study abroad and exchange program at Melbourne. And I have a team of 4 amazing staff that work with me on that program. And Melbourne and the University of Melbourne is a pretty amazing place to work, which is why I've been there so long.
That is great. Tell us a little bit about your own international experience. Have you lived, studied, or worked abroad? And if yes, where?
So I have lived abroad. Actually, I did study abroad, you know. When I was in high school, I studied abroad in Japan. That was the very first time I traveled overseas for 2 weeks in my last year of high school. So that was my first taste of international travel. And I think I probably got the travel bug after that. So when I was about 25, I moved overseas and lived in the UK for 6 years. And came back, and I've been in Melbourne ever since, which is where I'm born and bred. Yeah.
Right. Cool. So you worked in the UK then, or what did you do there?
I did. Yeah, I worked in the UK. It's a very kind of typical Australian thing to do, I think. A lot of people go over on a working holiday visa, but luckily I have kind of English ancestry, so I was able to stay and live longer. And it's that classic story. I was meant to be there for a year. And I stayed for 6 and then thought, oh, maybe it's time to come home. So was working at a university in the UK, actually, and one of our partner universities, King's College London, and then got in contact with some staff at the University of Melbourne, and they were recruiting. So all of the stars aligned, and the rest is history. I've been at the University of Melbourne ever since, working in global learning, which I love.
That is really cool. So what's another fun fact then that people would be surprised to learn about you?
This is actually, I think people are still surprised by this. My interesting fact is that I'm a twin. And some people who've known me for quite a long time don't even realize that I'm a twin. I don't know if that's because I act like I'm an only child, but when they find out I'm a twin, they're like, oh, wow, you're a twin? And then the next comment is usually, I've always wanted to be a twin. What's it like being a twin?
And what is it like?
Well, what's it like? Well, I don't know any different.
No. Do you have a twin brother or a twin sister?
I have a twin brother. And then the other question I always get asked is, do we read each other's minds, and do we have any kind of psychic connection with each other? And the answer to that is no, we don't, unfortunately.
And you don't dress alike, and you probably didn't dress alike when you were younger.
No.
A twin brother instead of a twin sister, so that danger isn't as big to be taken for each other, right?
Exactly, yes. But yeah, we went to different schools, have like different groups of friends. But yeah, that's my interesting fact. I'm a twin.
All right. See, that's something I really didn't know about you.
There you go.
All right. So, all right. Let's talk about the University of Melbourne then, since, as you say, it's such a great place to work and hopefully also to study. So there is a lot that can be said about the University of Melbourne, but just for starters, if you had to sum up the University of Melbourne in just three words or three hashtags, which ones would you choose?
I think I might have to cheat here. The first one is a hyphen.
Okay. Yeah, okay. We'll allow that.
Yeah, we Germans love hyphenated words, so that's exactly.
Dankeschön. Yeah. Thank you. So my first one, it'd have to be world leading, I think. World leading. So Melbourne, I mean, if you look at the rankings, we are up there. But I think in terms of our sort of research output and what we're putting out into the world, we really do stand up there against some of the best universities in the world. So that would be my first word, world leading. The other word I would say, the second word would be welcoming. The University of Melbourne has a really diverse sort of cross-section of international students and domestic students, and there's always so much going on, and I think sometimes, you know, being a world-leading institution, it could be very intimidating for students, but I think the staff that work there, the students that work there are always very welcoming and want to help as much as possible. So from a student experience perspective, it's a very welcoming place, and students that need help just need to reach out and ask. And then the third word I would say would be variety. So in terms of the way that our university is structured and our curriculum, we have sort of a different degree model to other universities, particularly at the undergraduate level. And we actually require students to look at taking, you know, a breadth of different study areas. And that also then comes across into our study abroad program as well. So students are able to focus and have, you know, a focused or major area of study, but then they're required to kind of go outside of that. So definitely our curriculum is varied, and you know, anything from a kind of arts, humanities, business, science, health sciences, engineering, IT, but also I think in terms of activities and things that are going on outside of the classroom, there's a lot of variety.
And you're referring to the Melbourne curriculum, right?
Yes,
that's the term.
The Melbourne curriculum. Melbourne
model.
Yeah.
Is it comparable to the American model of education then, that you have kind of this general education component to your undergraduate degree, or am I on the wrong track here?
No, you are correct. And it is sort of similar to that model, but that's actually quite rare for Australia. So a number of years ago, probably about 15 years ago, maybe more, we reduced the number of undergraduate degrees that were on offer, and we no longer do double degrees or dual degrees. So, you know, prior to that, there used to be, you could do a Bachelor of Commerce and Bachelor of Law. Now we only have sort of six undergraduate degrees, and there is that general education requirement for students that are studying. So a Bachelor of Arts student, for example, could be majoring in international relations, and they are then also required to take a number of arts electives, and then they have to take a set number of courses or subjects outside of arts. So that could be something from the Faculty of Science, it could be something from, you know, Fine Arts and Music, from Commerce. And so it means that those students need to have that depth of knowledge in a particular major or study area, but then also the breadth. So we call it breadth, but it is similar to the general elective requirement that is at US institutions.
And then I would think, I mean, maybe our audience that is primarily looking to study abroad in Melbourne for a semester or two, they might be thinking, well, but why do I care? Because I'm just taking kind of the courses that I need for my studies back home. But I 100%. Think where this comes into play is that it means that there is a variety of students in the classes.
Exactly.
So you will not only be with students in international relations, for example, but there will be students who might actually be, I don't know, biology majors or or French majors or engineering majors, but they might still be taking one or two classes with you. So you get a variety of perspectives, which I think is quite interesting in terms of discussions in class.
It is. Yeah, exactly. And it also, the other thing it means is that for some of our schools and faculties where they may only have a graduate degree program, they actually develop like undergraduate subjects that are specific and just for breadth. And there's also a number of subjects that are multidisciplinary. So faculties will come together and create these subjects using academics from different faculties to teach into them. So for example, our Melbourne Graduate School of Education, they don't offer a Bachelor of Education degree. They have a Master's of Teaching and a Master of Education. But they do have, and so, you know, outwardly looking, you'd go, oh, well, if I was an undergraduate study abroad student, I might not be able to study within that faculty. But they do have a number of undergraduate subjects that are on offer as breadth options for students and in some really interesting areas like sports education, motivation, well-being and performance. And so those types of subjects would have students in there from all of our undergraduate areas. And so you're 100% correct, Alex. Like there's going to be students in there that will have differing views and that are coming into it from a different perspective, which I just think makes a richer education and teaching experience.
And I love it because it also means that students who might want to take something out of their usual program during their study abroad term, they will not feel like the odd one out. So it's not like they're the only biology student in a history class, but there will be other students who are non-history majors. And I think that is kind of encouraging to go and pursue that. So I think it's a really cool model. So.
Yeah. And you know, where I think it most comes into play there is in areas like fine arts and music, because I think about, you know, some of the subjects that are on offer, like African drum and dance, for example. And so a study abroad student might be like, oh, I don't know about that. Is it going to be full of, you know, music students? It's like, nope, absolutely not. You don't need any prerequisite requirements for it. You could be next to a Bachelor of Commerce student that has never seen an African drum in their life. So, yeah.
Interesting. Yeah, that sounds like a really interesting setup. And yeah, we're going to talk about the university and the study abroad program in a little bit, but I also want to introduce our listeners to the city of Melbourne, which is very popular for international students and tourists alike. I've never been, but I've been wanting to go for a long time, and so I'm curious to learn what you can tell us about Melbourne. What do you think from your perspective, what makes Melbourne a, let's call it must consider city for international students looking to study abroad?
Yeah, so I think, you know, Melbourne is often up there on many of those ranking scales in terms of being a friendly student city and one of the top student cities in the world, and often, you know, the top student city for international students in Australia. And I think there's a number of factors that sort of go into that. It covers things like affordability, diversity, things like safety, employment opportunities after graduation as well. So I think that's sort of some of the key things that come into it. I mean, I'm a bit biased because I'm born and bred in Melbourne. And so I, you know, think it's a wonderful city to live in. But I think from a student perspective, things like safety, affordability, access to housing, access to healthcare, public transportation, those things that make day-to-day life easier so that then you can focus on your studies and focus on all of the other fun things, are actually really, really important. But then in terms of all of those other things, Melbourne is very much the arts and cultural hub of Australia. And there's just so much going on for students as well. And often I talk to our students and like they know things before I know things. And the older I get, I'm kind of like, wait, what's going on? What festival's going on? What are you doing? So often you just sort of need to walk through the city and stuff is kind of happening. And because of those, I guess, structural things in terms of public transportation, cost of living, all of those things make all of the additional activities really accessible for students. So, Elias, we need to get you to Melbourne at some
yeah,
point.
Yeah, for sure.
So you already mentioned that Melbourne is a cultural hub, and yeah. it's known as being a very trendy and also somewhat, I'd say, quirky city. Where does that reputation come from?
I think there's often a lot of sort of competition between Sydney and Melbourne, and I think Melbourne is kind of sometimes seen as the little brother or little sister of kind of Sydney. Like, we don't have the amazing harbour that Sydney has. We don't have a lot of the iconic architecture of the Sydney Opera House and the Sydney Harbour Bridge. And so we've kind of, I think, as Melburnians, we often feel like we have to be different. We want to be the cool kid. Like, we want to have that cool urban vibe, which is where that sort of hipster, you know, feeling comes from. So the arts and culture capital really is just because we are the sort of centre of art and music and theatre and food. And there's always like festivals going on as well. But the other thing that is really I think different about Melbourne is we're also the sporting capital. And this kind of goes back, like in history, it kind of goes back to sort of the, you know, Federation and the sort of gold rush era and things like that. Like, it's this kind of tradition of sport is one that is really, really big in Melbourne as well. And, you know, we have 2 days off for sporting events, 2 public holidays in the year because of sporting events. I mean, that's just so strange to me.
Oh, really?
Yeah, we do.
I didn't know that.
You
those
didn't
were
know?
One of them is the Melbourne Cup, right?
That's right, yeah. So yeah. That's a horse race, which obviously, you know, horse racing now, it's like kind of losing its shine a little. But the other one, we have the Friday off before the AFL Grand Final, the Australian Football League Grand Final, which we do get off at the University of Melbourne as well. Unfortunately, we don't actually get the Melbourne Cup off because it's exams. Oops, sorry. So that's not great, but yeah, in terms of the fact that we get 2 public holidays off, I'm like, that's just very strange to me. Mm-hmm. But you know, in terms of the arts and culture scene, I think the thing that I love the most is just the fact that we go, okay, look, we don't have, you know, all of those amazing landmarks. What we do have is that amazing downtown arts and culture scene, and it's all about those hidden spots. Mm-hmm. It's all about the, you know, amazing laneways that are covered in street art.
It's almost like a scavenger hunt, I always feel, when you're in downtown Melbourne. It's like you turn a corner and there's something there, right?
Yeah. And, you know, you need to find that new rooftop bar that doesn't take reservations. And so you have to go down the alleyway and then there's going
to
be a door on the left-hand side.
Say this word.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Then walk up these staircases and then you're on an amazing rooftop overlooking the skyline of Melbourne. Yeah. And actually sometimes getting lost is the best way to kind of find new places as well. And, you know, as long as you've got your Google Maps and then you can remember where things are and then pin them, you'll know how to get back to them as well. And then, you know, it's the cafe culture as well. Mm-hmm. That's a huge thing. Cool. And I could go on about that forever and ever.
I think we could too, but I'm not sure our audience tuned in for that. But
we'll have an 8-hour podcast.
We can do like an add-on. Yeah. Like you need to press this button on your phone and then you get the the extended version of the podcast.
Yeah. Can I just say one more thing, actually? I feel that kind of secret hidden thing, that also extends to the university.
Because I was like, just going to ask if there's anything quirky or cool about the university
there
as
is.
Well.
Yeah, we have, like, it's really weird, but we have an underground car park that is basically underneath our south lawn. And it has its own Wikipedia page, which also is a bit weird. but it's a bit of an architectural masterpiece. So it's designed in a way that it provides drainage for the lawn and the trees that are on the lawn above it. So it's this, it kind of looks a bit like this gothic sort of wine cellar. And it's one of our sort of secret places on campus, and it is a car park. So, you know, cars do park in there, but also it's been used for a number of kind of filming locations. So the original mm-hmm. Mad Max was filmed in the car park.
Oh.
And there's a little plaque on there. So that's the Mel Gibson Mad Max, but also it's often used for, you know, music videos, and an episode of MasterChef was filmed in there. It's used for fashion shows, and faculties will sometimes have parties in there. So it's one of those things that I kind of think, this is Melbourne, our hidden car park.
I think we're going to put the Wikipedia link into the show notes for students to look it up.
Yeah.
I don't think we've done that before, but I love it.
Yeah.
Cool. So, but the University of Melbourne is not only known for its underground car park, but also for its strong academic reputation. So what are some of the key factors you would say that contribute to the university's academic success? That's been ongoing for a long, long, long time.
It has. I think our research is really a big part of that. And I think a lot of our research, you know, it's looking at the problems of the world and trying to, you know, solve social and environmental and health and economic challenges that all of the world faces. You know, during the pandemic, even though we don't like to dwell on that too much, everyone went through so much, but researchers at the University of Melbourne were the first to actually map the COVID virus. So I feel like, you know, that's a big part of our academic success is the research that happens. But from a student perspective, you know, there's opportunities for students to get involved in research when they study with us as well. So that's the thing that I like, that it's not, you know, our study is experiential. It's not just theoretical. So students are getting involved. And then the other piece would be, you know, about creating and developing students into well-rounded and skilled and employable graduates. And whether that means that they graduate and go on to do further study and research and contributing to that world-class research, or if it means that they're given a wide range of different experiences when they're studying at Melbourne that then give them the pathway into employment, that's, I think, what leads to our success as well.
So in the QS ranking that came out in June, the University of Melbourne was ranked at, I think, number 14 worldwide, which makes it one of our most highly ranked partner universities and definitely the most highly ranked in Australia, ahead of two universities in Sydney. just speaking of the rivalry here, right?
They were joint, though, weren't they? They were joint 19.
They were, but they were joint five places behind you. So what do you think are the benefits of choosing such an academically strong and prestigious university for study abroad students coming over for a semester or two? Because what I find is a lot of the students that we work with, they are very destination driven. So when we start speaking to them, they often know exactly where they want to go in terms of geography. But there are so many universities to choose from in Melbourne. And several of them we work with. So why should they choose the University of Melbourne? And who should maybe choose the University of Melbourne? What kind of student are you looking for?
The thing I love about our study abroad program is that is actually what brings the diversity into our classrooms. And so, you know, we don't have a separate set of curriculum just for study abroad students. And so, you know, in terms of what type of student would be suitable, it sort of takes all sorts. And I think that, you know, if a student has their heart set on a different institution because of, you know, what's on offer there academically, or because they just feel that they would have a better student experience there, then I'm also all for that student going to a different university. You know, I don't want students to study at the University of Melbourne if they are not going to be successful there, either academically or, you know, on a personal basis. But I think that, you know, in terms of academic academics, students that, you know, are interested in a research intensive university would be suited for the University of Melbourne. I think that students who love kind of autonomy and self-directed learning would be really good at the University of Melbourne. And, you know, potentially students that also want to look at kind of, you know, further study and PhD research and those sorts of things would be really good at Melbourne. But also, you know, if a student wants to be located in the heart of the city, we would also want students like that, because we are literally, you know, a 10-15 minute walk into downtown Melbourne. So I think there's a lot that goes into a student deciding where they want to commit to study abroad, and Melbourne won't be the right choice for everyone. And I think that that's okay. And I think that there's also, you know, an element that comes into play where it's about destination Australia. And so if I'm talking to a student and actually I think you might actually want to speak to another university in Queensland, you want to do marine biology. Okay, well, you could find marine biology subjects at Melbourne, but actually maybe there's another institution that might be a better fit for you. And I'm always asking students as well, like, speak to people and look at the brochures, because I used to be a travel agent and sometimes I put my travel agent hat on, and when I'm talking to students, I know in their head they have a picture about what their study experience is going to be like. And so part of my job is to speak to them and figure out what is that picture in your head and what is going to be the best match for you.
Yeah, that's very similar to what we do as well.
Yeah,
right.
It's really to help help the students be able to kind of voice their or just yeah, put that image out there. For us to understand, and then we can try to kind of connect them with the
of
right
course.
University.
Because we, because we do have multiple options for students. So yeah, it's we have a variety. So it makes sense to just include the students' perspective, of course.
Yeah, and it, sometimes it's hard because like we're a big university as well, and so we sort of offer everything. And so when a student asks, well, "What can I study at Melbourne?" I'm like, I always put it back to them. What do you want to study? Luckily, we've probably got something that will suit you and you can mix and match. So that also works.
Right.
So, but if, you know, we get a student who's, you know, academically a bit like, oh, well, I just kind of want to do fun subjects and, you know, not academically, not really worried too much about studying. And I don't think that this is students from Germany at all. I think they're usually quite kind of focused on, you know, the academic side and things like that. But, you know, if I ever speak to a student like that, I'm like, okay, well, maybe Melbourne wouldn't be, you know, the best option for you, because it is, you know, tough and it is about that kind of self-directed autonomous learning. No one is going to kind of be checking up and making sure that you're doing your work. There's not continual assessment throughout semester. So if a student kind of isn't sort of prepared for that, then maybe Melbourne isn't the best choice for them.
Right.
But, you know, then having somewhere a world-class institution like the University of Melbourne on your resume alongside, you know, your home university, that's an excellent thing, and that will set you aside from someone who hasn't studied abroad. But then it's also about how you speak to that to future employers. It's one thing having it on your resume, but you know, if you don't actually know how to articulate your experience, then it's not going to mean anything.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, maybe let's talk a little bit more about the study abroad program then. And I think we've hinted at this, that students can take a variety of courses from different disciplines or subjects and stuff like that. But can you give us an overview of the program and perhaps also talk a little bit about the, you know, application process and and maybe if you have any pro tips from your side to to any of our potential future applicants.
Yeah, absolutely. So the study abroad program, so it's my bread and butter. You know, I'm looking at applications all the time. The program itself, we allow students to study at Melbourne for one semester or two semesters. We offer a study abroad program at the undergraduate level and also at the master's or postgraduate level. Students are required to have at least 1 year of study before they arrive in Melbourne. And also they need to meet our English language requirements and academic requirements. the application process, everything is done online. And one of the things I love about our application is that we also ask students to list the courses, or what we call subjects, that they would like to study when they're at Melbourne. And then part of our process is actually, you know, assessing the students' eligibility for the program. And then we start to work on whether students have met the prerequisite requirements for the courses that they would like to take. So yes, we allow students to mix and match. We don't actually allocate students to a particular faculty or a particular department. Students are enrolled at the University of Melbourne as study abroad students, and they're non-award students, so we're not awarding them a degree, but we're not assigning them to a particular faculty. So if there was a student who was studying business, we're not going to force them to take business subjects. As long as students have met prerequisite requirements, then they're able to do that mixing and matching. So it's very normal for a student to come to us and to do, you know, one or two things in business, for example, but then take an art subject or a science subject. Mm-hmm. And there's some really, really interesting options in lots of areas that you wouldn't necessarily, you know, think of. You know, German students might think that, oh, actually, you know, we've got a couple of subjects that are dedicated to beer. How interesting. beer styles and sensory analysis.
So I just was going to ask how many. So you say subjects, right? You don't say courses.
That's right. Yeah. Okay, so the terminology is different. And, you know, I think if everyone used the same terminology and the same grading structure and the same credit system, I mean, that would be amazing. But no, that doesn't happen. So, yes, what we call them subjects, so that would be the equivalent of your courses or units or modules. Mm-hmm. And then what we call a course is an overall program of study.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
I see. So it's kind of like a little bit of the other way around. Like,
yeah,
let's say other universities might do it. Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Exactly. Yeah.
But so how many subjects would a study abroad student typically take during the semester?
So usually it's 4 in a semester. In order to be full-time, a student needs to do a minimum of 3, and then the overall full-time load is 4. And I think for some students, they think, oh, well, that's easy. Like that, I usually do 5 or 6 at my home institution, so 4 will be fine. But in terms of the contact hours and how the subjects are structured, but also the work that's required outside of the class time, it is actually a pretty full-time load to do 4. But I think, you know, most of the students that I'm seeing coming to us from Europe will enroll in the 4 instead of the 3, but 3 is an option.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so what would like a typical in-class experience look like? You mentioned earlier that I forget the word you used, but that students need to be very
autonomous and self-directed.
Autonomous. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Autonomous. Yeah. So I'm guessing that as you pointed out, that there's a lot of, you know, structure and, you know, working outside of classes, but what would that typically look like? Yeah.
So the classes, I mean, it really depends on what the subject is, but the structure is generally lecture and then tutorial style. There might be some, you know, more scientific classes that will have a lab component, or there might be some more creative subjects that will have a studio component as part of them. But generally speaking, it's lecture and then tutorial. So a lecture would be a larger group of students, and then the tutorial would be more sort of seminar based. So smaller numbers of students, and very much like led by discussion. So in terms of the contact hours, students will be provided with, you know, a reading list and an LMS module for each of their subjects that will have all of the reading requirements on there. And so it is an expectation that students will do the readings prior to class and will come prepared and ready to discuss those.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I feel like with most of our students, they seem to be very structured and focused. And yeah, as you mentioned earlier, that it's typically not a big deal for German students to get by at University of Melbourne. But just in general, are there any like sort of support services for international students? Or like, how do you make sure that students or international students feel welcome and included at the University of Melbourne?
So I think our goal, because we also have, it's around kind of 40% international students now that are doing, you know, degrees at the University of Melbourne. The idea is that every student that comes to Melbourne, whether they are a domestic student, an international student, a study abroad, an exchange student, they will have access to all the same services. In terms of support for studying, we have an academic skills unit that will provide workshops and, you know, one-to-one support for students in relation to things like referencing and things like that. And those things happen all throughout the year, not just during orientation. So academically, students are supported throughout. And then also we have services that are relevant to students that need to seek special consideration, you know, if they need an extension to things. And so that's through the Student Equity and Disability Support Service. So again, that's a central service. So, you know, we're not necessarily creating standalone things just for study abroad students. We obviously have the Global Learning Team that is there to run additional activities and to support students, but then we also direct students to all of the same services. And it works really well because, you know, we're sort of sending and referring students to those experts within the University of Melbourne that really know what they're talking about, and they're used to seeing international students and speaking to international students about the particular needs that they might have.
Right. Cool.
And where do study abroad students typically live when they come over for a semester or two? Do you have on-campus housing, for example?
We actually have a housing guarantee. So we can guarantee an offer of housing for study abroad students that are coming in. Where they live, it really depends on where the students are coming from. Like, I find that European students are much more kind of capable and keen on finding accommodation that is off campus. But we do have on campus housing options, and we can obviously guarantee that offer of university accommodation.
Okay. So
that's more kind of like, we've got different options. We have apartment style, we also have residential colleges.
So for students looking to live off campus, what are some neighborhoods around campus that you can recommend? And having been to Melbourne, I'm really curious to see if I hear some familiar names there. I have some ideas of what you might be recommending.
I'll be listing all of the I'll be listing all of the suburbs I'd like to live in that I don't live in.
But if you recommend that to international student, that makes it even harder for you to find
something. What am I doing?
Maybe don't. Yeah.
Maybe live by the airport.
Yeah.
No, don't do that. So the University of Melbourne, the main campus is in Parkville, which is sort of just very, very close to the sort of central business district of Melbourne. So that sort of suburb is called Parkville, but then there's a suburb just neighbouring that called Carlton, which is really nice. So that's sort of our little Italy. So post-World War II, there was a lot of immigration to Melbourne. And so there's a big Italian population, Greek population. So Carlton has a lot of amazing Italian restaurants.
And that's where Lygon Street is, right?
That is where Lygon Street is. And my favourite ice cream shop. We haven't got to food yet, but FYI.
Is that called Brunetti's, or is that the other one?
No.
Oh, we talked about that. It's not Brunetti's. It's another one.
It's a new one you haven't been to yet, Alex. It's called Pippo.
You know what? The funny thing is, here in Frankfurt, we have an Australian ice cream shop. It was founded by an Australian who moved to Germany as a fitness instructor, actually. And then, she took a different career path and she opened an ice cream shop, literally a few hundred meters from my house, which is very dangerous.
Oh, I love it.
I need a fitness instructor now. And she actually has, she's a couple of kind of cookbooks and food related books in her ice cream store. And she has a Peter Pippo cookbook or ice cream book or something. So it's crazy.
That's it. That's the one. Yeah,
and she mentioned that too. So, okay.
It's the best. Yeah. So I actually had it the other night. It's the middle of winter here and it is cold. Uh-huh. But I heard some colleagues that are from some of our international offices. They come to Australia every year and they were here in the middle of winter. Mm-hmm. And we went out for dinner and afterwards I was like, we have to go and get Pitta Pippo. So I had mascarpone with quince jam. That was the flavor of the ice cream. It was excellent.
Very nice.
Anyway, we've gone off track. We were talking about
anyway. Carlton, Ligon Street, Italian restaurant,
yes.
Best ice cream shop. Okay.
There you go.
So, and that.
So the other ones I would recommend. So Fitzroy is quite trendy, very cool. Brunswick is very, mm-hmm. very cool. And North Melbourne, probably on the kind of the other side of campus, is also a great location. So if students are looking at living off campus, we actually also have an off-campus housing network, which is an online system that is only available for University of Melbourne students once they're enrolled to both search for housing but also advertise housing. Mm-hmm. So if you have, you know, if there are students listening that are thinking, actually, I'm just going to wait until I get there and then I'm going to sort something out and maybe I'll get an Airbnb or something for a couple of weeks, that would be a great option to use the off-campus housing network. But yeah, those would be the suburbs around the Parkville campus that I would recommend: Carlton, Fitzroy, Brunswick, and North Melbourne.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And which one of these neighborhoods is the one that has Gertrude Street?
That's Fitzroy.
Okay. I remember it was kind of one of my favorite streets when I was there last. There were so many good coffee shops, little vintage stores, and there's something to kind of discover on every corner. A lot of like organic food places, a lot of cooperatives, and I loved it. It was really cool. Is that still a thing? Or
it is, and there's a great croissant place there too.
I feel like there's a lot of note-taking involved in this episode.
It's on my end, definitely. So, yeah, and I really get itchy feet of going back to Australia.
It's just making me hungry.
With the pandemic, it's just been, yeah. So, anyway, just very quickly then, I was meaning to ask this at a later stage, but as we're already kind of touching upon the subject, so Elias and I, we're big foodies, which is nice when we travel together for conferences and stuff. So we have to ask, what is the Melbourne food scene like? Are there any kind of particular dishes, restaurants or cafes that are hip right now and that students swear by?
Well, we have a new student precinct, which has a lot of kind of new food places for students and staff, obviously. There's a new bubble tea place. So I keep seeing students walking around with bubble tea, which I'm not so much of a fan of. But we also have a number of amazing cafes on campus. Everyone kind of has their favorite cafe that they go to get their coffee every morning. Mm-hmm. They're on campus. Like there's about 19 of them on campus, but also if you go off campus, I mean, you just need to throw a stone in Melbourne and you would hit an amazing coffee place. Mm-hmm. There's also a really great cafe because I think, you know, the other thing is, there's a cost of living crisis all around the world, really. And Australia is not immune to that. I could recommend loads of amazing kind of restaurants and cafes to get amazing breakfasts and brunches. But I'm also acutely aware that it's expensive to study overseas. And so you also want to look for places that are cost effective. And there's an amazing actual social enterprise that has just opened up on campus, which is Journeys Cafe, that is run by the Asylum Resource Centre, Asylum Seekers Resource Centre. Mm-hmm. So it employs asylum seekers and has some really amazing and quite cheap food as well, vegan options, vegetarian options, a lot of Middle Eastern and Asian food. They do these amazing curries and soups and toasties. So that's one on campus that I really love going to, and it's in our new student pavilion. So that's really great. But also, you know, we've got some great Vietnamese and Indonesian and Japanese places around campus as well. There's a big Asian culture and some mm-hmm. amazing Asian food as well.
Okay. So what's the coffee style of the hour in Melbourne at the moment? We had Kat from the University of South Australia on the podcast earlier uh-huh. this year, and she told us about magic coffee, which I hadn't heard of. It's not a thing here in Germany yet, but what kind of coffee do you like?
So I do appreciate a magic. So that's uh-huh. a double ristretto with 3/4 milk. But also my standard is a strong skinny latte. Mm-hmm. So it's all about cup size. It depends on what size the cup is, because I don't like things too milky. So when I mm-hmm. travel, I have like a series of questions I have to ask. I'm like, how big is the smallest cup that you have in ounces? How many shots of espresso is in that? And then obviously milk options are kind of a big thing, but I just go for like non-fat, like skinny milk. But mm-hmm. you know, nowadays it's so easy to get oat milk, lactose free, soy, almond, like right. in pretty much every cafe mm-hmm. in Melbourne. Mm-hmm. And some of them don't even, there's some cafes now that don't even do dairy, like mm-hmm. dairy milks. They only do like nut milks, which I find a little
quite
bit
a few
annoying,
here but... that actually where oat milk is kind of the standard, and if you want
yeah.
like regular kind of dairy, you have to ask for it. So I've fallen into that trap a few times where I got my coffee with oat milk and I thought, tastes different. No, I like it, but it's just different, right?
It's
so
different.
It's like if you expect something else, it's yeah. weird. So.
Yeah, because for me, I only do oat milk and I get excited every time there's not a, you know, surcharge on
yes.
oat milk. So yep. yeah, I've seen that more and more recently.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
Yeah, it's and then, you know, for those people that want that disgusting kind of, you know, Frappuccino style, there are some Starbucks around Melbourne as well. But you'd never see me in one of those.
Yeah,
Starbucks in Australia.
I know.
It's like there's like going to Starbucks in Italy or Spain where
yes.
you have so much good coffee.
Because
like,
I was going to say, especially if you're in a place like, yeah, Melbourne, where the
yeah.
coffee culture is very important, so you don't actually have to go to Starbucks
yeah.
anymore. Yeah.
One of the things I laugh at when I there's been a couple of times, you know, mainly around orientation when it's, you know, an all team event all day, and so to get everyone prepared, I'm like, okay, I'm going to go down and buy coffees for everyone. I'm like, send me your coffee orders. And it's seriously, I have the longest list of things. I'm like, this person's having an almond cap with no foam, and this person's a soy latte just with one shot, and this person's having a batch brew. I'm like, oh God.
And then milk on the side. And like, yeah.
Take it very seriously.
All right.
For sure. All right. I think, yeah, before we get sidetracked with all the mm-hmm. food and coffee related questions, let's talk a little bit about campus as well. Because I know from a student's perspective, at least for international students, when they go abroad, the campus experience is very different from what they are used to. And it's a very important part of their study abroad experience. So I'm keen to learn about what the University of Melbourne campus looks like. What is campus life like? Are there, you know, any events for study abroad students where they can get involved?
Yeah, absolutely. So in terms of what campus is like, the University of Melbourne is the second oldest university in Australia. So Sydney is the oldest. They did beat us there, but we're the second oldest. So we were founded in 1853. So that means that we have a traditional campus, but a real eclectic mix of buildings. Mm-hmm. So we've got some buildings that date back to the 1800s. But then we also have, old sort of sandstone buildings, but then we also have modern buildings as well. And in terms of things that are happening on campus, there's always something going on. And our student union, there's over 200 clubs and societies for students to join. And all of those are available for study abroad students to join as well. So whatever, you know, a student's interest, they're going to find something. And I feel like, you know, sometimes I talk to our students when they arrive and they're like, I don't really know. I'm not really sure, you know, I like you know, Harry Potter, I'm like, oh, we've got a Quidditch club. So sometimes it's just about going to orientation and just, you know, figuring out what's going on. There's also a number of kind of intercollegiate sort of sports groups that students can join, both competitively but also socially. Mm-hmm. And in terms of specific things for study abroad students, because as I mentioned before, like with how our students study, because they're not assigned to a particular faculty, they are often, you know, not able to attend kind of faculty specific orientations. So we will run an orientation specifically for our incoming students. And that's actually running in a little over, oh no, in 1 week's time, next Friday. Ooh, it is happening Friday. For our second semester, semester two. So we're going to have a lot of students, over 600 students arriving, which is really exciting. So that's a really great opportunity. I'm hyper aware that with study abroad students, you know, they want to connect with domestic students, but they're also going through a very unique experience. And so they want to kind of be surrounded by students that are going through a similar experience right. to them. So this is an opportunity for our students to meet each other. And we have a little army of student volunteers that help us out on the day that are often our returned students. So students that we send on outbound study overseas programs, mm-hmm. they come back to Melbourne and they want to stay connected and they want to talk about their experience and they miss being overseas and they want to try and stay as involved as possible and they want to chat to international students and pretend that they're still studying abroad. So they help us out on that day. And we also invite along our specific student society, which is called MUSEX, the Melbourne University Student Exchange Society. And they run a lot of events throughout semester. So students are able to join. That's a great club and very, very popular with our study abroad students joining that. And that's it doesn't just have study abroad, inbound study abroad and exchange students. It's also got Melbourne students that are thinking maybe they want to study abroad. Or students that have just got back from studying abroad and they run lots of great trips, you know, around Melbourne and they'll do nights out and things. So a great way to connect and to start to meet domestic students, like local students as well. But yeah, the clubs and societies, there's so much going on. We've got a Eurovision club. I don't know if you guys knew that. Yeah.
Well, I knew that Eurovision is popular in Australia. I mean, especially now that really? you have a candidate. Yeah, there's actually Australia participates in
the
I have not kept up with that.
Yeah.
Why is this so weird? A lot of homework that you need to do.
Yeah, for sure.
We do have a subject which is called Eurovisions, and it is about Eurovision, really? But it's told in the context of kind of there's like a political element and how, you know, politically the voting blocks work and the history of it. So, potentially not one that a study abroad student from Germany would be interested in taking, but for, you know, other students.
It's still very unique.
Yeah.
Kind of curious what that course or what that subject would look like. Yeah.
Might want to look at the syllabus.
yeah, exactly.
Maybe put that in the show notes as well if I find
we'll pop that in
the course. So let's put that in. Very good. Cool.
So
So
you mentioned that you also plan trips in and around the city. From your perspective, what are, let's say, some of the must-see spots or must-do activities for international students in and around Melbourne?
Yeah, so it's
take
the
note, Elias.
There'll be a quiz at the end. So the Global Learning Team doesn't kind of organise trips for students, but the Melbourne University Student Exchange Society will organise trips. They do like a surfing trip down the coast, but if students were going to choose one thing, or listeners, if you're thinking of one thing to do outside of Melbourne, I would say go down the Great Ocean Road. And I don't know whether you've done this, Alex, but this is one of my favourite spots in the world. The Great Ocean Road is just outside of Melbourne, and that's where the 12 Apostles and a lot of other amazing kind of rocky outcrops are. It's a beautiful drive along the coast, a lot of history, a lot of beautiful nature down that way. So I would say that that is a must do outside of Melbourne. And then I've already sort of, you know, touched on this, but I would just say explore the city, go through the laneways of the city, and try and attend as many festivals festivals and, you know, there's cultural festivals, food festivals that are going on, movie festivals. In our semester one, the comedy festival is on, which is an amazing experience. You know, during the summertime, we have moonlight movies in the botanical garden. So there's always just so much going on. Sometimes I think it's very easy to just, you know, stay in your little bubble. And if you're living on campus, you might just go out around campus and not actually explore. In terms of other suburbs around Melbourne, St Kilda is my other favourite, and that is on the beach, on the bay, and that is another little great spot to go to. There's lots of wonderful restaurants there. There's even like a little group of penguins that come in at nighttime in St Kilda. So the other main kind of touristy spot outside of Melbourne is Phillip Island, and there is a penguin parade. Mm-hmm. So you can go and watch the little penguins coming in from the sea and going to bed at nighttime into their little burrows.
But so that's another Phillip popular Island spot. A bit overrated.
Do you?
Yeah, I think because it is such a, it's like an organized event. I find like the students to go there, and then you wait there until the penguins come, and it's you have to pay to see them.
You do.
I feel
so
like
you
if can you
go
can,
to St. Kilda.
If you can see them in St. Kilda, you go out on the pier. And even during daytime, sometimes if a penguin isn't feeling well, they might stay behind, and then you can get to see them during the day as well,
when
or you can
trying,
see them kind of swim
sick.
Off. And, yeah, I know. It was like that was the first penguin I ever saw out in the wild was kind of a poor penguin at the St. Kilda Pier who was waiting for his or her friends to come back. Or maybe he was just having a lazy day. I don't know.
Maybe.
I
mean, sometimes you just need to have a little rest.
Yeah. But St. Kilda is really cool.
It is.
My favorite breakfast place in Melbourne is in St. Kilda. It's do you know Fitzrovia?
Yes.
Very nice place.
Yes. Well, talking of St. Kilda, there's some great music venues down there as well. That's the other thing about Melbourne. Another interesting fact, we have more live music venues per capita than anywhere else in the world. So there's great concert venues, some big ones, some tiny ones, some, you know, dark ones with sticky floors. It's just amazing. There's some great music venues, and St. Kilda is one of those places that has some great music venues. I'm penguins.
And penguins, yeah.
So as an insider, what's one piece of advice that you would give to students who are about to embark on their study abroad journey to Melbourne?
This is hard. I think I sort of reflect back on what I do when I travel, and I try to be really organized. I'm a very organized person. And I think a lot of our listeners are probably going to be quite organized. I think it's probably a German trait, being trying to get very organized and having a plan in place and trying to anticipate everything that's going to happen.
Right.
But if you're studying abroad for 6 months or 12 months, I would say try and kind of leave space to expect the unexpected and to say yes to things. And the other thing I would say is try and sort of set yourself a goal. And it doesn't necessarily need to be a very big goal. It could be that you want to make 3 Australian friends, for example, during your semester, or even smaller than that, I want to join a club. And I touched on this before, like I think it's very easy for students to kind of stay in their little bubble, but try and say yes to things and get outside of that bubble and experience something that you, you know, won't be able to experience back home. Mm. And that could be a travel experience, it could be a personal experience. I mean, I think, you know, a lot of our students that are coming from Europe, they make the most of every opportunity, and they often see more of Australia than Australians do. And they try and kind of, you know, course plan so they can have long weekends, and then every weekend they're somewhere. They're hiking. They're down in Tasmania. They're in the Northern Territory. I would say you can try and plan and be as organized as you can, but also, you know, make sure you've got that space for doing some random things as well, and just saying yes to things.
So don't pre-book all of your trips for the weekend.
No, because you might meet an Australian friend that has a car, and then you know they can take you places.
That's good.
Expect the unexpected.
Yeah, I think that's a good title for the podcast, actually. Expect the unexpected.
Oh, ice cream and coffee could be the other one.
I think the one with Kat from Adelaide had kind of koalas, culture, and magic coffee. I think that was hers. So we need to do something to kind of stand apart. But anyway,
yes.
So before we jump into kind of my favorite segment of the podcast, the this or that question round, maybe just one final kind of serious question. Mm. Can you share any inspiring or fun stories of students who've come to Melbourne through the study abroad program? Is there anything that kind of stuck with you?
There is one, and actually it links to what we were just talking about in terms of, you know, setting yourself a goal. A couple of years ago, we had a student, he was studying with us, he was French, he was studying with us for a year, and he was part of our student panel for our orientation at the start of his second semester. So as part of our kind of welcome briefing, we have some current study abroad students who come along and they talk about, you know, what it's been like studying at Melbourne. And he'd set himself a goal. When he arrived in Australia, he wanted to learn how to surf. And he'd never surfed before, but he was like, I'm going to learn how to surf. And so he joined the surf club and he learned how to surf. And then by his second semester, he was like president of the surf club. He was like obsessed with it. And so in our student panel, he was like telling everyone, he was basically trying to recruit students for the surf club, which I was like, go for it. But that was one where I was like, this experience has changed this person's life. I mean, I see it all the time, you know, a student who they might arrive in Melbourne and be a little bit unsure about their future direction or their future purpose. And then at the end of semester, you know, their lives have been changed by the semester or the year that they've had studying in Melbourne. And it could be that they have a clearer direction about future study that they want to do. Not necessarily at Melbourne, it could be, but, you know, it could be that, you know, they've decided that, you know, when they get back home, they're going to finish their degree and then they're going to go on and do a master's program or a PhD program in their home country or in another country. Mm. I had an alumni from our study abroad program who went back and finished her degree and then emigrated back to Melbourne and has been living and working in a consultancy firm in Melbourne ever since. And there's numerous stories of, you know, students that find their life partner studying abroad and then, you know, end up staying forever. But yeah, that surfer story is one that I'll always remember. This French student who was just like all of a sudden just transformed into this like Aussie surfer guy after one semester was the best.
I wonder what he's doing now, if he's kind of
he's in Hawaii. No, I don't know where he is. He's living his best life somewhere. Good
probably,
on him.
Yeah, he's opened a surfing school in France.
Yes,
you know?
Probably.
You got to look him up on LinkedIn if you can.
I
don't know his name.
I
so
should.
Probably, definitely. All right. Well, I would say it's time for a this or that question round. We have prepared a couple of questions for you. Some of them, I think we have already, I'm not going to say answered, but you've at least mentioned some of the options.
Okay.
So we'll see what you say now that you have to actually choose between two options. So are you ready?
I'm nervous, but I'm ready.
You're nervous.
Let's
okay.
Go.
You should be. So yeah, what is more fun to watch, Australian Open tennis or Formula One race in Melbourne?
Oh, that's easy. Australian Open tennis.
Is it?
It is. I feel like the Grand Prix, they just go round and round. It's very noisy. Mm-hmm. The Australian Open tennis, amazing. I try and go every year if I can. And actually, it's getting better and better because of all of the additional things that happen in that precinct aside from the tennis.
Cool. And that's sometime in January, right?
It's in January, yes.
Okay.
It's so right in the middle of summer.
Mm-hmm.
Nice. It's usually at the end of January, so before the start of our semester. So, yes, definitely key if students are arriving for semester one, try and arrive at the start of January. And you can get ground passes. So you can get passes to go in that don't give you a set seat, and then you can just wander around the precinct. And a lot of evening things happen there as well. It's pretty amazing. And I've never been to the Grand Prix.
But that, I think, is in March, right? Because I know it was on when I was there once, actually having breakfast at Fitzrovia in St. Kilda, hearing kind of sound of the training, I think, that was going on that morning.
It's noisy. Yeah,
because it's like an inner city course. It's quite central.
It is. It's around Albert Park Lake. Yeah, it's a beautiful course. I think it just depends on your kind of interest. I just don't really have an interest in like car racing. Or cars.
Yeah, but I mean, you already mentioned there's the Melbourne Cup as well. There's the AFL Grand Final. So there's a lot going on in terms of sports.
There is.
That's really good.
And Australia's hosting the Women's World Cup in.
I know.
Very
that's
very
coming
soon
up this
with
month.
New Zealand.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Very good. In the middle of winter, though. So that's.
I know.
And at an odd time for us, it's kind of morning games and nighttime games. But
I know. Well, I'm watching the cricket at the moment. That's the other thing.
Okay. Oh, gosh.
I love the cricket. So, yeah.
You love the cricket.
Boxing Day.
Okay.
I do. Yeah. That's another interesting fact about me. The Boxing Day test after Christmas always happens at the MCG, the 26th of December. Yeah.
Cool. Very good. So, second question. Better place to catch some sun rays, St. Kilda or Brighton Beach?
St. Kilda.
Okay.
Easy. St. Kilda. Okay. So
Brighton Beach is where they have these colourful houses, right? Like these little
bathing
houses.
Yeah, the beach boxes. So from an Instagram perspective, yes, Brighton Beach is better. But I think in terms of additional things to see and do, I don't lie in the sun a lot. And actually, a lot of Australians don't. I think we're scared of skin cancer. You know, growing up in the 80s and 90s, we were sort of taught to be scared of the sun. So we don't often kind of lie in on the beach for ages. So I always choose a beach location that has other things going on. We've already spoken so much about St. Kilda, so I definitely choose St. Kilda.
Okay. I mean, speaking of St. Kilda, then the next question should be to your liking. So better place to visit, Melbourne Zoo or Luna Park? And you might need to provide some context on what Luna Park is.
Well, there is a Luna Park in Sydney as well. But Luna Park is like a little theme park. And it has in St. Kilda. And it has a big kind of clown entrance that you walk into the clown's mouth. But it is quite an old theme park as well. So I would say out of those two, I would want to go to Melbourne Zoo because I've been on the roller coaster at Luna Park and it's not very comfortable because it's a bit old. So, you know, like when roller coasters are a bit kind of rickety, like it's very safe, but it's just not very comfortable. The thing I love about Melbourne Zoo is sometimes they have zoo twilights in the summertime, so they'll do concerts at the zoo. And I recall a number of years ago I went to see an amazing Australian, an old Australian artist called Paul Kelly, and he was playing at Melbourne Zoo. And as he was singing, the lions were roaring in the background. Ooh. It was amazing. So I was like, oh, I don't know if they like his music and they're kind of roaring in appreciation or they don't like his music. I'm not too sure. But everyone packs a
disturbing our peace.
Yeah, so we're trying to sleep. but everyone packs a picnic and they go to Melbourne Zoo and you can go and sort of walk around and see the animals and then sit and watch some amazing music. Yeah,
but then Luna Park, I think it's I haven't been inside, but it's like right in the middle of St. Kilda. It's right next to this little kind of shopping street. And the first time I saw it, I was like, what is this theme park doing kind of in the middle of the city? And it has a bit like a morbid charm, I find.
It does.
Like especially during daytime and when it's closed, it looks like a deserted theme park.
Yes.
So I think that could be a great venue for like music videos and filming.
It would be.
Stuff as well. It's an interesting place.
It is. Yeah. So I guess there's a couple of places in Europe that would be similar to that. I saw
Coney Island in New York.
Yes.
I think that's very similar.
Find.
Yeah.
Or and possibly also like maybe Brighton or Blackpool in the UK as well would be similar.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, all right. More fun to explore, Melbourne Laneways or the Royal Arcade? Easy, probably, as well.
Laneways.
Laneways.
I think Laneways. Yeah. The arcade is good for, like, if you want, you know, if you're looking for like a nice souvenir or a gift for someone, the arcade is good. But, you know, the laneways and the street art in the laneways, second to none. Cool. I love it.
And then like a good place for maybe a, I don't know, taking a friend on a date, Eureka Sky Deck or a Royal Botanic Garden?
Royal Botanic Gardens. Mm-hmm. Yes. Moonlight cinemas in the summertime at the Royal Botanic Gardens. Beautiful. Mm-hmm. Again, packing a picnic. And yeah, I mean, Eureka Sky Deck, you get a good view. But also, you can't always count on the weather in Melbourne. We are known to have four seasons in one day. So I would say Botanic Gardens, definitely.
Cool. Cool. And then, final question. What's on your toast, Vegemite or avocado smash?
Vegemite's terrible. It's avocado smash every day of the week.
You're Australian. You're the first Australian to actually say that.
Are they going to kick me out?
Are they?
Yeah. They're going to – immigration's probably coming around now. They've heard me say I don't like Vegemite. I didn't grow up with Vegemite, so I just – I really, it's too salty
just
for me.
Just blame your parents.
I know. I grew up with, like, marmalade and jam and peanut butter. But, yeah, avocado toast. You know, when I go out for breakfast with my friends, they always just – they know that that's what I'm going to order. And sometimes I'll go, oh, yeah. I won't. I'll order something different. And then my eyes always just get drawn back to the avocado toast.
Yeah.
Can't help it.
With or without the poached egg?
With.
Yeah.
With. Or I would, you know, I would switch out the poached egg and I would have it with like some amazing Meredith goat's cheese or some feta or some dukka on
both.
Top. Or all together, yeah. This is very true.
Cool stuff.
Very and then good. My coffee on the side. It has to come with a coffee.
Of course. So, perfect. You did amazing. We actually did an extra question just because you were so good with the this
Thank
or that
you.
Question.
Just passed. Yeah. I passed.
You passed. I think you passed, definitely.
Yeah, for sure.
And I think this has been such an informative episode. It's been great for me to kind of, it definitely brought me back to Melbourne. I can see that Elias has been taking notes and probably putting together his itinerary.
I definitely
for
have
his first
to, yeah,
ever
yeah, I
visit
definitely
to Melbourne.
Have to re-listen to the episode because it was, yeah, as you said, so much information on all the spots you need to visit. So, yeah.
But since you will be editing the episode, I think you will have plenty of opportunities to re-listen to it.
Yeah. I'll listen to it a couple times probably, yeah.
That's good. Yeah, Belinda, thank you so much for coming on today. I know it's Friday night, so we don't want to keep you too long, but I think this has been really, really good and super informative for students thinking about coming to Melbourne Uni and studying abroad in Melbourne. So I hope you have some nice plans for the weekend. And
thank you.
I'm sure we'll be in touch again soon.
Excellent. Thank you so much. This has been really fun and it's made me really hungry, guys. So I'm going to go get dinner.
Sounds good.
All right. Take care. Thank you
I'll
so
see
much.
You in
take
Melbourne.
Care.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
Ja, was soll ich sagen? Wieder mal eine Episode mit vielen tollen und gerade für mich auch neuen Eindrücken.
Ja, du lernst jedes Mal was dazu. Gibt es denn irgendwas, was dich überrascht hat?
Was mir jetzt nicht so bewusst war, war, dass man beispielsweise bei der Uni wirklich zwei Fliegen mit einer Klappe schlägt. Akademisch ist die Uni Weltklasse und dazu studiert man auch noch in einer unfassbar spannenden Metropole. Klingt eigentlich zu gut, um wahr zu sein.
In dem Fall stimmt's aber ja tatsächlich. Und wenn ihr euch jetzt selbst davon überzeugen möchtet und Lust auf ein Auslandssemester in der University of Melbourne bekommen habt, dann werft doch am besten gleich einmal einen Blick in unsere Shownotes zu dieser Folge. Dort findet ihr einen Link zum Hochschulprofil und zu den Erfahrungsberichten ehemaliger Semesterstudierender der University of Melbourne.
Außerdem findet ihr in den Shownotes wie immer auch unsere Kontaktdaten. Ruft uns an oder schreibt uns, wenn ihr Fragen zur University of Melbourne habt oder euch ganz allgemein über die Möglichkeiten eines Auslandssemesters an unseren Partnerhochschulen informieren möchtet. Wir schicken euch dann gern unsere ausführliche Bewerbungsanleitung mit vielen Infos und Tipps zur Bewerbung an der University of Melbourne zu. Die Anleitung ist natürlich kostenlos, genau wie unser gesamter Beratungs- und Bewerbungsservice, da wir von unseren Partnerhochschulen für unsere Arbeit bezahlt werden.
Wir verabschieden uns jetzt erstmal in den Urlaub und hören uns dann im August wieder. Bis dahin sagen wir vielen Dank fürs Zuhören, genießt weiterhin euren Sommer und habt eine gute Zeit.